when you really get those communities on the ground that are really advocating and they're really saying like, I don't care about all the politics. I don't care about all of this argument and that. I'm concerned about my own child and their future. And when you get those parents engaged like that, you better watch out. And then you get the whole community, you get grandmas involved and you get like, it takes off.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to Learning Unboxed. Today, we are going to be talking about micro schools as a positive disruptor and how we think about the concept of what is school and why does it matter. Joining us today is David K. Richards, founder and CEO of Changemaker Micro Schools. So, David, welcome to Learning Unboxed.
Thanks for having me. Excited to have this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a very, very timely one because lots and lots of people are talking about micro schools these days. So just to set a bit of context for our listeners as we get started, Changemaker Micro Schools is a network of innovative, love-based micro schools. Love that. We're going to talk more about what that all means. And this is a school for game changers, caring innovators, and those that want to build the future together, launching in fall of 2025. In addition, David has lots of thoughts to share on the rise of micro schools and his experience with traditional public charter and now the ever-growing micro school movement. So, David, let's start with the 100,000-foot view question. So, why this work and why now?
Yeah, I've totally fallen in love with micro schools. So, I think the through line is innovation. So I'm so excited about this podcast. When I found it, I was like, yes, yes, yes. And it's always been like, you know, my experience as a student and having a pretty mediocre experience in a very, you know, affluent suburban public school in California and just kind of scratching my head, like, what are we doing here? I ended up having to redo high school in community college. So I did 3.5 years to get my math and English credits. And then I got really good at school at community college, not through K through 12. And then I ended up transferring to UC Berkeley and getting my master's from Stanford. So I've sort of seen it from all angles, from kind of the struggling student. I've always worked in urban schools. And so I've always connected with those kids because that was like me growing up as, you know, growing up with a single mom. But I always joke, like I've walked the halls of Stanford and that's a very different environment than where I grew up, you know? And so I've seen it from all angles and I'm really excited about micro schools because in every school I've ever worked in, so I founded 10 schools as a teacher, principal, superintendent, as a board member. And everyone I've ever worked in, I've always been really big on relationships. And if you're going to try and innovate and do different things, you really have to have strong, strong relationships. And that's where love-based comes in, is my schools always have a strong social-emotional learning component. And so I really love micro schools because a lot of the problems you deal with running a school, you're now compressing down to a much smaller number. You know, we had 400 student high schools, which, you know, is pretty small for high school. And I was the guy who, as a teacher, would learn every 100 ninth graders' names before they arrived. And they'd all be shocked. Like, how do you know my name? Are you a stalker, right? They're teenagers. But, you know, learning 400 kids' names was actually a lot of work. But having a small school of, you know, a micro school is defined as 5 to 150 kids. And that could be 150 kids that's K through 12. And so you're breaking down a lot of the systemic issues that you see with the factory model of education. And you're simplifying everything and bringing it down to the essence of what school should be in my mind, which is building deep relationships and inspiring kids to be the best version of themselves.
I think that's the reason why I, like you, I'm super obsessed with the concept of micro schools. I mean, and it's interesting for me, right? Because when I put my anthropologist hat on, this notion of these small, very intimate learning environments, there's nothing new about this.
No, not right? at all.
It's just that we collectively chose, right? Mm-hmm. We collectively chose to forget about the value of learning this way.
Yes.
Within this big, large sort of systems work that's been happening all across the country and around the world in various sort of different iterations. So it's not like this is a new concept, but somehow or another, we turned ourselves off to the value of learning this way. And so like you, in a post-pandemic world, if you will now, for me, it's just really, really important that we reconnect and find the value, like you said, in relationships. But more importantly, I would argue that we find the value in allowing learners to explore the world in a way that gets them excited to learn, right? The fact that you had to go to community college to complete high school, you know, that's crazy. That opportunity at community college should have been about digging in a safe space to learn the things that you already know you love.
Exactly. Whereas for me, it was falling in love with learning in community college because I was like, oh, wow, this can be really fun. And it's so interesting. I get to study things I like. And yeah, so it's so fascinating you say that because my mother-in-law grew up in small town, rural Nebraska. And she's kind of like, this is not innovative, buddy. You know, she's this is a school I went to in Nebraska. And I'm like, yeah, I totally get it. But I love the way you framed it around the fact that we've just chosen to forget. But it makes perfect sense, right? When you think about, I was a history student, you know, when you think about the changing tides of history and the pendulums and stuff like that, it's like, it makes sense that we're coming back to, let's really make this about relationships and smaller. And to your point, really empowering kids and helping them see every school I've ever run is there's a very big self-directed component. And the reason I believe in self-directed learning is because it empowers the child to really see the world for, you know, what it is and to ask questions and be curious and to drive their own learning. And amazing things happen. When I opened my elementary school, I went from high school to elementary, and I asked a lot of elementary school teachers, you know, what do I need to know about self-directed learning in elementary school? Not realizing that that was a foreign question. So their first response to me was, oh, those kids can't do self-directed learning. And I said, oh, that's funny because Maria Montessori has been doing it for 100 years with like two-year-olds. So I'm really unclear why you don't think a seven-year-old can do it. But anyway, so we worked through that. So I really believe in empowering students and giving them the choice and the voice and really putting them in the driver's seat. And I feel like in a micro school, you can really actually, like I said, you can do that. You can create that school without as many hurdles and obstacles.
Absolutely. And you can do it so many different ways. That's the other thing, is one size does not fit all. In the same way that all of our learners and, quite frankly, all of our educators come to the table with different strengths and weaknesses and experiences and personalities, loves, passions, hates, you name it, right? The same can be said for the way that you implement or think about or structure a micro school, because they can be highly variable, which is part of the beauty. So with that in mind, then, David, tell us a little bit about what Changemaker Micro School is actually going to be. What's it going to look like, feel like? Who's it going to serve? What are you thinking about with this?
Yeah, well, you're not going to be surprised by the preview that I just gave you. But yeah, there's going to be a real big focus on social emotional learning, what we call a mind, body, spirit curriculum, and a place for them to create. So an experiential project-based learning, and then also just a lot of freedom to direct their own learning. And, you know, that's so foreign to so many people. And that's why I'm excited to find a few teachers, you know, because we're launching in the fall in Phoenix, Arizona is going to be our first school. And I'm really excited to find teachers that really understand how to turn this on its head and to, you know, put the questions in front of the kids and to let the kids ask the questions. So those are kind of the key elements: project-based learning, self-directed learning, and social emotional learning. That's every school that I've run, you know, or worked in. And when I was a teacher, I did that in the traditional public schools, right? I actually created an environment where it was student-centered and the kids were working on all these interesting projects. I still talk to my 10 and 13-year-old today about my favorite project when I taught 10th grade world history. Is technology a blessing or a curse? We did that years ago, and that's the question I have with them on a regular basis. So you're really putting kids in the driver's seat and giving them a lot of opportunities to ask big questions and to struggle through learning and to be in a safe and supportive environment. And so that's a vision for Changemaker Micro Schools, which is really just another version of what I've already done, but I'm excited about doing it in a much smaller environment, you know, without all of the kind of obstacles that you'll find in the bigger schools.
And so just for the sake of our listeners' clarity and understanding, so this is going to be in Phoenix. Yep. And is it a part of an existing public school? Is it completely independent? How are you couching that element? Because people always want to know, right?
Yeah.
And then What do you anticipate as sort of the age range or grade range, however you're thinking about it, in the first cohort of participants?
Yeah, so the first cohort, I'll go in reverse order. The first cohort will be K through six, which is basically, you know, a lot of micro schools will do multi-age cohorts or multi-age. So we're really thinking like 4 or 5 year olds to, you know, 11 year olds, maybe like 12, right? And the other part of your question, oh yeah. So a lot of micro schools, you know, there's the National Microschooling Center, which I've really loved to, I'm glad to find it. And I always share it on podcasts because they've done some reports. And I think those reports are really helpful to, for listeners that are like, well, I'm not really sure about this or that. And one of their reports talks about how, I think it's a third of microschools are actually now within district schools. And so the districts are saying like, well, this is interesting. This could really work with us too. And, you know, I have a friend who runs a charter school in Indiana and they just started a micro high school as part of their high school. So my charter school that I currently have is in Sacramento, California. And the reason we're going to Phoenix, Arizona is because they have an education savings account law where families can get a debit card and use that to spend $8,000 on a private school. So, you know, this is controversial depending on where you stand on all of this. And as somebody who's been a public educator for 25 years, I get all the controversy. And the question I asked my wonderful friends that we have over dinner, because we get some really spirited conversations, is I always just ask them, you know, I'd love to hear kind of what your alternative solution is. And then I always say, look, this is not, we're not going to try and replace public schools by having private micro schools that are funded by the government, but we're trying to create a portfolio and we're trying to show people what's possible with different options. And we're trying to turn this big ship just a little bit. And so I always think, you know, I always remind them that in my belief, you know, there's a monopoly, which is the public school district, and it's really hard to create change in a monopoly. So yes, mine will be a private micro schools, which I've never done before. I've never actually done private schools. I've worked in them when I first started years ago, but I've never actually, you know, run a private school. So it'll be a private school, but the population will be very similar to the charter schools that I've run, meaning that it's like mixed income, mixed race, and it serves all different types of kids, and we won't turn anybody away.
So it'll be an interesting journey. You're going to learn a lot as learn part a lot. Of this, right? Yeah, absolutely. Super wonderful.
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Stay tuned for the full unveiling of my forthcoming book, Hacking School, 5 Strategies to Link Learning to Life, where we'll dive deeper into these topics and unlock key strategies to educational transformation. If you want to stay in the know, sign up for notifications at pastfoundation.org/hackingschool.
Let's circle back around to those educators you mentioned really early on. In your mind, when you think about how you would explain or define, what is the sort of profile, if you will, of an educator who you feel like really is able to not just embrace the concept, but literally run with it and find joy for themselves as an educator, right? Because that's one of the things that we've seen. Educators are exhausted. You know, they're being processed to death. The list is actually pretty long, you know, once you talk to folks. But there's so much joy that can be had being an educator. You know, I come from a family, everybody I knew in my family are educators, my parents, aunts, uncles, all around me, right? And so it can be joyous, yet we've lost a lot of that as well. So what does that profile look like for you?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because as you were saying about the joy in teaching, it's like, I remember my 10 years as a teacher in the classroom is like always my favorite memories, right? And it's like, there's nothing like a kid that's learning something or building that deep relationship and then seeing them get that aha moment. And so it's sad to me that we have so many teachers that are not happy because that's where they should be spending their energy. So I think that's what the vision is for the teachers that I will have in the micro school. And I think you'll see this in a lot of the smaller micro schools because of the fact that the teachers get to do what they love. So we're looking for teachers that love to connect with kids, that love to inspire kids, that love to have smaller groups. And I think the most important thing is there has to be a teacher that's really open to doing it in a different way. So I know with my charter schools, that was a real challenge because we don't have to get into this now, but the teacher training programs are typically so traditional that even if you hire a first year teacher.
Can we get into that, David? Please. Because okay. I think you and I will agree a lot. Okay.
I didn't know if you wanted to go
there.
Let's
talk about something that needs to be redone.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the root problems is from my seat of running these innovative schools, you know, 10 schools in the last 15, 20 years, I'm trying to hire teachers. And there are these amazing people. And they really understand we have similar values. And then you're like, okay, let me go and try and maybe hire a brand new teacher. I know it's risky, it's hard, but at least they'll have some, they'll be a little more open and they won't kind of learn the traditional way. And then, you know, say, no, I'm supposed to talk at the kids and they're supposed to listen. You know, you're not going to undo all these habits that we don't agree with philosophically. And then you sit with this wonderful, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, whatever expression is, new teacher. And they've been trained by somebody and in a teaching training program that's telling them that they're supposed to be the expert at the front and the sage on the stage. And so they don't even realize that they're not a good fit. And then I've hired them knowing that, you know, we could work with them to kind of help them see how this could really work. But it's so much undoing that it's really, really hard. So my friend runs a micro school in South Dakota, in Martin, South Dakota, on the reservation she grew up in, right outside of it. And she said her best teacher was a nurse. And it reminds me, not a teacher. And I love all you teachers, and I'm one of them. And so please don't take this the wrong way. But it reminds me of Richard Branson, who said, the best innovators are the ones who are known enough to be dangerous, but don't really know the industry that well, right? And so I feel like a highly trained teacher and someone who's been around for years, it's going to be harder for them to change the paradigm, wear a new hat, and think differently. And, you know, when I had my schools in, I had a schools in East San Jose of California, and we basically told all the teachers, you're only doing student-centered instruction. No more teacher-centered. Oh my gosh. I thought I was, it was scary. You know, and
yeah, you thought you're going to have a riot on your hands. Right?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, I was a little worried, but we understood that it was really hitting their identity and their self-esteem and their emotions. And so we worked really closely and thoroughly and systematically and helped them and trained them and taught them. And it took 3 years and it was brutal. But at the end of that 3 years, we had teachers that no longer were doing teacher-centered instruction. And it was incredibly hard for them. And they had signed up for it. Right? They had said, I want to work at this school. So it's not easy. But yeah, those are the teachers we want to have. And I think those are the teachers that will, it's the people that want to be the early adopters and show people that there's a different way to do this and that you can get so much joy from doing it this way because you don't have as much classroom management. You don't have as many classroom management issues. It's amazing. I don't know. I could go on and on.
It really is amazing, right? And that's definitely what we see. You know, we're getting ready to celebrate 25 years here at PAST, and the Innovation Lab has been up and running since 2015. And I tell everybody that walks in the door, I say, I want you to do two things. I want, first and foremost, I want you to just pay attention. Can you figure out what's going on here? Most of them can't, not right off the bat. And that's a beautiful, beautiful thing, right? Because you're going to have kids here doing this and kids over there doing that, you know, and you're going to have all of these adults randomly coming in and out of the building all of the time, you know, interacting with these kiddos. And, you know, there's all this stuff that's happening. And I said, and the other thing is I want you to clearly, positively identify for me, who's the teacher in this room? And mostly they can't find them. And that, in my mind, is a real win, right? You know, the win is that the educators are learning new things alongside with their kiddos. They're facilitating, they're guiding, and they're mentoring, but they're not just standing and delivering, to your point earlier. And I think that most of the educators I talk to, that's what they wish for.
Absolutely.
They may not articulate that they want it because they're afraid, I think, in many cases to want that. Because again, back to that system and the way that we're training educators is sending people down a very, very different path. But honestly, it's not the path that's really going to make most folks happy. Because there's not enough autonomy. And the kids, as we all know, they push because they're trying to learn to be adults. The only way to learn to be adults is to make mistakes, to push, to find boundaries, to do all of those things. So I appreciate that piece of our conversation. My same question to you now, though, that we asked about how the educators in the space sort of come to be is, how do families make a decision that this type of environment is the right one for a particular kid, for all of my kids, for us as a family, or even for my community? Because again, how do you even know?
Yeah, I really want to talk about the families and the parents. But one other thing on the teachers that I think is important. I remember when I worked at the charter school that I first started at, and my the principal actually went into the classroom to observe you before she hired you. She came out to my classroom in Oakland and she was like, okay, this is what I want. You know, she could see that we shared the same philosophy. So I wanted to make sure and say there are teachers out there in a big high school or a big elementary school or wherever, a rural area, and they're doing this amazing student-centered work. So I just wanted to make sure we're highlighting that, which I'm sure you do all the time, but just wanted to get that out there. And then as far as the families go, I remember talking to funders when I was raising money 10 years ago for my current charter school that's very student-centered and you know, self-directed. And they kept saying to me, I don't think the families are going to buy what you're selling. And I started to get really offended by it because I was going into an urban community. And I started actually trying to find a very diplomatic way to respond to that and say, what do you, you know, I can't remember what I said. I'm not always as diplomatic in these moments. But what I ended up saying was like, what do you really mean by that? What do you mean they're not buying what I'm selling? You know, is it, are you trying to say to me that this community really just wants traditional school and drill and kill? And once I started really digging, I realized that that was kind of the unconscious bias that they were putting out there. But what I would say to them is that's interesting. So I have 500 signatures from families that want this school to open. So, and you know, 90% of them are low income families in communities of color. So I don't know what you're talking about. And what I will say is that I would sit with these families because I would, whenever I recruit students, I always go and sit and do like 1, 2, 3 hour conversations with the families because I want to make sure that they understand what we're doing and they're clear on what they're signing up for. And they're always nodding their head a lot. And they might not understand the jargon. They might understand the educational research or any of the, you know, things that are fancy, but they understand the concept, which is, oh, my kids are going to get to be curious. My kids are going to be creative. My kids are not going to be sitting there and have to ask to go to the bathroom. And they're not going to have to ask, you know, when they get to pick up their pencil, like they get to make choices in their life. And there's a lot of head nodding. And so what I have found is that all different ranges of families are very interested in this. And just like the teachers we talked about, the only thing holding them back is fear. And I remember a lot of the parents saying to me, this sounds great, but I'm really scared because I didn't go to school this way, or I just don't know enough about this. And it was a little bit easier when I had elementary versus high school because it was, you know, lower stakes. But typically, you know, then they jump in and then they go through it with you. And then they say, I'm really nervous now because, you know, you're not doing traditional grading. I want to know that my kid, you know, you're not doing as many standardized tests as the traditional school. And they start getting nervous again. So you have to constantly just kind of be shepherding through the process, building the trust and letting them know that, remember those not head nods you were giving me when we first met? Let me now walk you into a classroom. And now you see my favorite test, where's the teacher? And they're like, I'm not sure. Great. Okay. So now would you like to have a classroom where you don't know where the teacher is, or you'd like to have a classroom where you know where the teacher is and they're sending you standardized test scores every month? And, you know, you lose some parents because they're so nervous, but you find the ones that are really on board. And the number one thing is you talk to their kids, right? And the kids are coming home and it's always a kid with ADHD or the kid with an IEP. And the family has had some experience at a traditional school. And now they're like, my kid loves school and my kid jumps out of bed. Whereas before they're labeled as a problem child. And so it's those experiences, I think, that really change the parents, you know, because you're changing their hearts, right? You're changing their hearts and their minds because their students are getting such a great experience. And they're like, wow, I don't know if this is really traditional or if this is going to work, but I can tell when my kid comes home that it's working.
Yeah, we hear that too. And again, going back to this concept of joy, it is a joyous thing, right? You know, we see these kids that, you know, they're so excited to tell their families. One of the things that we do here at PAST is that every experience that a student goes through, at the end of the experience, they stand up and they provide a sort of a public demonstration of what they learned, right? In part because we're trying to help them get super comfortable telling their story, speaking, you know, all those kinds of skills, right, along the way. But the beauty of it is that, you know, A, those kids, it's a scaffolded experience, right? The more they do it, the more comfortable they get. And you can watch the polish coming on, right, over time. But the best part is watching the families and those kids who just won't stop telling them about all the things and the way the pieces and parts were connected, right? And these are the same kid, back to your point, where, you know, previously, you know, how was school? Fine. Mm-hmm. If you were lucky, you got a fine, right? Not an I hate it, but you got zero information. And so I think that there's just so much incredible value in that. How then, as these programs get started in your mind as you see these micro schools within a community taking hold and being successful? How can, at the community level, how can communities leverage that success for more and more kids? Because that's the tough thing, right? We all in this innovative education space, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've gotten this conversation, and I know that you have. Well, that's great for those 10 kids or those 50 kids. But what about the 5,000 that are going to the regular school? So how do we, or should we, it doesn't matter.
I think we should. And even if it's, you know, I think the charter schools in California now are about 10%. I think it's around the same nationally. And so I think that changes the conversation around whether you like them or not. At least you have the data, and it changes the conversation about, well, this is different than maybe some of the other schools. So you have a data point, you have something to work. So I think we should do it in terms of the kind of portfolio argument and, you know, pushing the kind of Netflix to the cable company argument, right? You want to have some sort of disruptors on the side that are showing things differently. So I think we definitely should. And so with Changemaker Micro Schools, this has really become like a movement and a revolution. And it's like, it's getting bigger and bigger, and it's not, I'm not doing it. It's just coming through me. And so our current model has, it is actually serving 40,000 students in the next 10 years. Because what we're doing is we're building a micro school, like in a box that you can take and open in your community. And so the first one's in Phoenix, and we're going to take all the things I've done over the years and kind of like build it and make sure it's great for families. But at the same time, we're also going to, you know, create these elements that people can take into their community. And so we do really have a vision for trying to serve as many kids as possible. And I think the other piece is that there is a movement here. Like, people are getting really excited about this. And so those teachers that are disillusioned in a traditional school right now, and they're like in year 3, 4, 5, or maybe even year 25, and they're kind of like, I just know this could be different. And I feel, you know, we can also give them the school in a box, and they can go and take this and open it in their community. So yeah, I do think it needs to serve as many kids as possible. I don't think it's, like I said earlier, it's not going to take over public education. It's not going to shut down your public school right down the street. But I do think it's a really important piece of what could be different when you shrink the school. And the fact that the districts are already opening micro schools shows you that, you know, they're seeing the same thing we're seeing. And I think it starts to create some more. When I ran my charter school in the San Francisco Bay Area, we were like, this is like 2001. So we were one of the first schools to have every kid take the college prep A through G California, you know, requirements. We had advisory groups of 12, and we had every kid taking AP courses. And we had all these kind of, at that time, very innovative things. And after being in the district for 7 years, you know, with a waiting list of 500 kids, meaning that a lot of the district families were trying to come to our school, the district, by year 7, they had all kids taking A through G college prep requirements. They had open access AP. And so you started to see that this model that we had with just 400 kids in a district of 40,000 started to actually change the bigger district and their behaviors, because they were worried that the families were going to leave, and the charter schools were going to really start taking a lot of families.
And I think that a lot of innovative efforts around the country and around the world are seeing that same sort of ancillary impact, if you will, right? It is definitely, and you know, that's a wonderful thing in so many ways, obviously. But what I think is the most powerful element of what's going on with that is that it's happening from the ground, right? It's a lived experience within these communities that is forcing a change on a system that does not want to change. It does not want to modify the system. I say this all the time, you know, it's not broken. It's just obsolete. It's functioning exactly as it was designed. Right. And so because there's nothing wrong with the system as designed, it doesn't want to change. And not because it's super resistant, it's because the system itself wasn't engineered to do that. And so, you know, what I love is that elements like what we're talking about with micro schools today, or what we're talking about with innovative ways for out of school learning, take your pick, right? That those things become these locally driven levers that then cause change, not the change of the system. A whole new system is being engineered almost in real time. It's fascinating.
You are speaking my language. And I realized that you had asked like, yes. I'm over here jumping up and down. Yeah. And I really do. You had asked about the community, like in that original part of your question. And I really feel like I just was on the phone with some folks in Arizona, and like right before this, and they were asking me, like, why can't you come to this community? You know? And I was like, well, we're only, you know, and I started feeling that community feel of like, we really just, we can't do this anymore, where for our particular situation, you know, when it's your own child, you're like, I can't do it anymore. And I need you to come. And when we took our charter schools to San Jose, there were 1,000 parents that were like, you have to come here. And we were choosing between like 4 different communities. And when you really get those communities on the ground that are really advocating, and they're really saying like, I don't care about all the politics. I don't care about all of this, this and that, and this argument and that. I'm concerned about my own child and their future. And when you get those parents engaged like that, you better watch out. And then you get the whole community, you get grandmas involved, and you get like, it takes off. And I really feel like that's what I'm seeing with micro schools is this, it's like, and then there's this energy of, you know, it's like, it's something you can't really describe, but people are just so engaged and they're so into it. It's almost like a political movement, right? You start seeing all these people getting really engaged and volunteering and so many creative ideas, and they're finding spaces in church basements and they're converting old office buildings, and all the parents are coming to paint it. And it's like this amazing energy. And I feel like people really want that. And then you add the fact that like their kids are, you know, really happy and doing well, and it starts to pick up really quickly.
It really does, right? And we see that. You know, it's really funny. And this, I'll just give one little brief example as we get ready to wrap up here. But every late winter, early spring, take your pick how you want to define that. You know, we open up the experiences that we do year round for a whole set of summer experiences. And it's gotten to the point now where we have to sort of figure out what we're going to do, because we have families lined up before the doors open to register, wrapped around the building. And we have more people wanting to have the kids participate. And again, it's the same thing, like the grandma's kids, you know, grandma knows about what's going on there. And so their kids who live out of state will come, you know, for 2 weeks to grandma's house so you can go do this thing, right? You know, it's a like you said, it's a fabulous problem to have. And that's going to be sort of that wave, I guess, if you will, that is going to really sort of drive that movement ahead. So with that in mind, David, you know, as we sort of think about wrapping up the conversation, you have a lot on your plate coming up, and it's super exciting about what's going on with this launch here just shortly in terms of the school opening in Phoenix. But I always like to recognize that, especially with innovators and change makers, if you will, that it's not all rosy. So what are you preparing yourself for? What's that thing that's niggling in the back of your mind? Because I think that's fair as folks here listen to these conversations. Like, what are you worried about?
Yeah, I think the biggest concern that I think people will have with micro schools, and I'm worrying about, is really the facility. And it was the same concern we had in charter schools, because, you know, it's so hard for me, like when I drive by this, like there's a closed elementary school one block from my house. And I walk by it every day, and there's a little like sadness in my heart, because it just sits there. And I'm like, oh gosh, this could be such an amazing school for like a charter school. And now it could have like 10 micro schools in it. I think the facility piece is really going to be a challenge. And so that's what I'm worried about. And then I also think the piece that we didn't bring up, because it's always good to share this, is that these are smaller schools. So you have to figure out how they're going to work financially. And so that's something that's been like a really interesting challenge from charter schools of 400 coming down to like 30 kids in an elementary school. So there's ways to make it work, but it's the concern of that. And then for me, it's just the question of like, I've never had parents actually paying for school. So this is an interesting new question for me, because I've always offered it for free, which, and you know, with the education savings account, you're kind of offering it for free, but some parents will be paying. So it's just a thought of, you know, how do you create such a quality option that people are going to pay for it. But yeah, those are kind of the things on my mind. And then obviously the question of scaling, you know, we're talking about, whenever I see that kind of 10-year growth plan, I like, my heart kind of skips a beat. It's like, well, that's a lot of 40,000 families in the next 10 years. Like that's not a simple task. But what I will say from my previous organizations is that because you have that community support and you have that vision of, you get these amazing educators, these amazing families, amazing kids, and they will blow your mind. And so anytime I have those worries, I just remember the kids that still text me from 14 years ago that were their first ones to family at college, you know, the moms that I used to hug, and now they're texting me and saying, oh, he just got his first job. You know, I remember all those stories, and I think about how they overcome all the obstacles, and I know that it's going to be okay.
And it will. And it'll be more than okay. I predict it's going to be brilliant. So absolutely. Well, David, thank you so much for taking time out of your day and sharing with us what's going on with Changemaker Micro Schools. And we're looking forward to hearing more about it as it goes along. So thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.